Welcome to episode 271 of the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I'm Ashley Scott Myers, screenwriter and blogger over at sellingyourscreenplay.com. Today I'm interviewing producer Tom Brahmana and writer Stephen Hoover. They just did a film called Tinker, a family-friendly sci-fi drama. They both live in Louisiana and are making careers for themselves far from Hollywood. We dig into their story and how they got this film produced. This is an especially inspiring story for all the writers who aren't living near Los Angeles, so stay tuned for that interview. If you find this episode valuable, please help me out by giving me a review in iTunes or leaving a comment on YouTube or retweeting the podcast on Twitter or liking or sharing it on Facebook. These social media shares really do help spread word about the podcast, so they're very much appreciated. Any websites or links that I mention in the podcast can be found on my blog in the show notes. I also publish a transcript with every episode in case you'd rather read the show or look at something later on. You can find all the podcast show notes at www.sellingyourscreenplay.com/podcasts, and then just look for episode number 271. If you want my free guide, How to Sell a Screenplay in 5 Weeks, you can pick that up by going to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. It's completely free. You just put in your email address and I'll send you a new lesson once per week for 5 weeks, along with a bunch of bonus lessons. I teach the whole process of how to sell your screenplay in that guide. I'll teach you how to write a professional logline and query letter and how to find agents, managers, and producers who are looking for material. Really is everything you need to know to sell your screenplay. Just go to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. Quick few words about what I'm working on. I'm trying to get my next project going, the horror thriller film I've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, or couple of months now, I guess. We've got a first draft of the budget completed, but it's way too high for the amount of money that I actually think I can raise. So there's three producers on the project, me being one of them. So we're just trying to get together for an actual in-person meeting, and we're basically just going to go through the budget, you know, line by line, and try and figure out where we can cut corners and potentially bring the budget down quite a bit more. And it's just proving difficult to get all three of us in a room. So that's been the delay for the last couple of weeks. And we're probably not going to be able to meet for another week or two, but it is slowly moving along. In the meantime, I've just been tweaking the script and starting to make shot lists. I've just been going through thinking about transitions between the different scenes and sequences, starting to just come up with some sort of rough shot list. One of the things that I found, I got this advice from my good friend Nathan Ives before I went into the pinch, was just really make sure you get a lot of pickup shots. And those are just little inserts, you know, just little insert shots for every scene. And when you're on set, things move quickly, and so you often sort of just forget, ah, we could use that or use that. And it's very, very helpful when you're editing if you just have little insert shots, you know, the person's hand twiddling their thumbs, or, you know, picking up a pencil, or just those little things can sometimes really save you in editing. And I did some of it because I did get this advice, but that's one of the things I'm doing with this next script. It's like transitions I'm going through, really trying to think through what are those transitions, and those need to be planned out ahead, because sometimes, you know, if you're panning the camera one direction, you want to pan next in the other direction on the next scene, and those scenes might not be shot back to back. They might be shot, you know, days and days apart, so you just got to think that stuff through. So that's what I'm trying to spend the time, go through with that, the scene transitions, and also, as I said, just come up with a basic shot list for these inserts. I found, especially when I was doing the pinch, I found until you really have the locations, it's hard to really know exactly. You can kind of make a rough shot list, but it's very difficult because the location is going to be somewhat dependent, especially something like this where a lot of it is at one house. The house is going to be important. And frankly, whatever house we end up getting, there'll probably be some rewriting on the script just to accommodate that location. And that's fine and that's normal. But just in sort of a broad sense, trying to get the transitions, trying to get the insert shots, and just a rough idea of how I would shoot these scenes. So just going through the script like that. And again, it's just familiarizing myself with the material, really thinking it through, understanding sort of the purpose of each scene, and just doing it slowly as I'm doing, I think is helpful. Oftentimes I just want to get going on my next project. You know, things have kind of slowed down, so I'm resisting that urge to start writing something new or working on something new, and just try and stay focused on this project because I am kind of committed at this point to getting this one done one way or another at whatever budget level I am ultimately and able to raise. So I just want to keep my focus on this project, on this script, keep trying to make it as good as possible so that, you know, I just give myself the best chance of success once it is done. So anyways, that's the main thing that I am working on here this week and for the last couple of weeks. So now let's get into the main segment. Today I am interviewing producer Tom Brahmana and writer Stephen Hoover. Here is the interview.
Welcome, Stephen and Tom, to the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I really appreciate you coming on the show with me today.
Hey, yeah. Our pleasure, man.
Sure, thanks for having us.
So to start out, maybe you can give us a little bit about your background. Tell us a little bit about your background. Just a couple of things just to bring us up to speed. Where did you guys grow up and how did you guys get interested in the entertainment industry? Tom, let's start with you and then we'll go into Stevens in a second.
Well, I'm from Louisiana and never really was into film or production. And it was a really big deal back in early 2000 when we started having a really robust film industry. A lot of studio films were coming to the area, and back in 2000, oh goodness gracious, 2011, I sold a house to an actor that came in from LA wanting to relocate, and he said I should be a producer, and I had no idea what he was talking about. I wish it came with disclaimers.
Exactly. You're still not sure what he's talking about, but you're out there.
And a film fund, that would have been
So, I mean, you know, I'm from Louisiana. I went to LSU for mechanical engineering. Professors told me that I was too outgoing and talked too much. So my dad's a master of civil, so, I mean, I understood exactly what he was talking about. And got into real estate and been doing it 15 years. And I love what I do. It's helping families. And I just felt like I had, you know, I could help other people. And inspirational, meaningful film just kind of was pulling on my heartstrings. And here we are, man.
Okay. So, Stephen, yeah, maybe you can bring us up to speed, too.
I'm a practicing attorney here in the Baton Rouge area, but I've been a lifelong fan of film. And I mean, I went to Michael's Pub. I think I saw Kirk Douglas was there with Woody Allen and Mia Farrow back when I was in college. So, I mean, I've been a long time avid movie fan. And then I guess about 10 years ago, I started writing scripts again. And, you know, the film folks came here and I had some success in various contests and got a few things optioned, a few things still under option. And Tom, you know, as a go-getter, I saw that this was a film that was actually going to get made. And I think you kind of reach a point, as you know, where you just kind of want to get something done and not just have it on the page and in your computer, but out on some screen somewhere. And Tom's definitely a guy to make that happen. So
yeah, did you know that all screenplays didn't get made?
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
There's a few of them. There's a few of them out there.
Yeah.
So how did you guys meet? That would be, I'd be curious to hear how you guys sort of formed your partnership.
You know, Stephen and I, we've been friends for years now. Yeah. And it's because I got involved with the film community. The first production company I opened up back in 2011 was on a film called Zombie Plantation. Don't go IMDb it because it never did get made, but it was a beautiful script. But yeah, we actually met through the circles. We were doing meetups. We had a lot of the similar, you know, friends, acquaintances that had the same type of ambitions, and they wanted to tell a story. And I could respect Stephen being an attorney because I knew that he had some ethics behind him. Past people that I worked with did not. It cost me about $40,000 to learn that first lesson. Right. But you know, we just connected and since then we've done film festivals. We've got with groups, we've collaborated. It's, you know, it's good to have somebody that does stuff.
I think when you come from a business background, it's more like, okay, this is something we can go do. Let's treat it. If it's building a house or building a legal case, you know, there's certain steps to take and then you make those things happen. So I appreciate working with Tom because he's a finisher. He's not a talker. He's a producer.
We don't get paid unless we finish something.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Both of our jobs.
Well, I get paid by the word sometimes, it seems like.
Yeah, so, I do envy that.
We actually have to accomplish something. But yeah, a lot of these producers I started doing options with. And as you know, you kind of take a chance with different people. And it's like, are they going to get to the finish line? Are they going to get there? Are they going to walk through the, you know, across the coals and write the checks and, you know, who would take money out of their account? Or are they just kind of talking and kind of throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what sticks? And unfortunately, I guess over the last 10 years, I've had more of the latter kind that haven't been able to make it happen. And
well, they wanted you to raise money.
Right.
Everybody's like, oh, man, great. I got this great idea. I've got this great story. And I'm like, okay, how long you've been working on it? one person I know has been working on their project 4 years. And when it all comes down to it, the question they have to me, especially after we've had success with Tinkers, do you have anybody that has money? And, you know, you kind of want to help them, but at the same time, it's like giving a referral out to somebody. You got to be cautious because you don't know what their work ethic is. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you just kind of want to keep tight-lipped.
Yeah. So just, and maybe you guys can both just answer this briefly. You go to these sort of networking events, and I'm a big proponent. I mean, almost every week on the podcast, I'm telling people, go to local film festivals, get involved in local film communities. And I think this is a prime example of exactly what can, the good that can happen to it. But I've also been to a lot of those local group meetups, and you meet a lot of people that you're just listening and you're like, I don't know if this guy's really ever going to do anything. How do you discern the people that you can work with and you think actually have the work ethic that you have, or versus the people that are maybe more into talking? And maybe there was some little thing that you saw in the other person that kind of maybe could help other people, things to look for.
Biggest thing is you have to have a place for them. And what I mean by that is that if I talk to an actor or I talk to somebody who's below the line, I need to be able to have a place for them, because I've learned at this point, it's a lot easier to find something that I have a passion for and then to tackle it myself, because I can't wait for studios. I can't wait for other people's projects, because I've just kind of, and I hate to say it, but I've gotten burned waiting on other people's projects. I mean, it's cost years. Years of development, years of just basically walking away. And I don't have the time. I mean, I know I look great for my age, but I'm 45. Okay. I just don't have the time, you know, to put 2 years into something just to say, I have nothing to show from it. And except, you know, debits from my checking account. So ultimately I'd meet people and I'd find out what they were doing. You know, some people were reclaiming, you know, old sets, you know, from like the Expendables. I had a friend of mine that was just taking all the old sets. So I realized that was a resource. It doesn't dictate the development of the project, but it can be a collaboration once you get past the development. But realistically,
so this friend of yours is like buying up as these movies come into Louisiana, they're shut down the production. They sell all this stuff off and he's just buying up all these props. And
matter of fact, he could be scrapping, you know, but he got to a point to where, you know, he ended up getting the walls and the steel ladders or the steel steps from Expendables or just sets, you know, I mean, he's a cleaner. And he has a warehouse and he's like, look, I got a lay down yard, you know? So, I mean, realistically, if you find people that are taking advantage of that for an independent filmmaker, I mean, what are we about? Budget, saving money. So, I mean, if we can bring somebody on board, they get a credit, make them part of the crew, you never know. I mean, it could become a great relationship. But most of the people at those meetups are actors. And there, a lot of them are just looking for work. So what we did here is that we formed a filmmaking group, which wasn't just made up of actors, but we made a commitment of doing 4 shorts, 1 per quarter, whether it was going to be on an iPhone or whether it was going to be on a Dragon. It didn't matter. The job was to come up with shorts, produce them. And if we didn't have content, we'll just duplicate something that's already been done. But it's the idea of working, teaching, learning together.
Yeah. I would say, you know, just to interject, just, you know, looking at the track record, if you have somebody, you know, let's say you're a writer, you're looking to work with a producer, you know, what have they done in the last 5 years or 10 years that they've been trying to produce? And then I guess certainly, you know, do you get along with this person because it's a long haul? And, you know, are you willing to, you know, go on that ride with someone on that journey with someone?
And do you need $2 million or you can do it for $500,000?
Right. That's a big question. But I do wish that I had the time, you know, with my family commitments and work commitments to be able to go to more film festivals, because I felt like once I started going to those, you're meeting producers, directors,
distributors.
I mean, I got an option on a script that got shopped to some major places. We didn't get a deal, but hey, you know, I got reads at some big name production companies. So yeah, the film festivals would be a very good thing to go travel around. I do on the meetup. I do, you know, you do see a lot of actors, and then if you're in LA, of course, you're kind of just talking to other desperate writers. So I don't know if you're making much progress, but you know, be that guy that, you know, just talk to people. Don't try to immediately go into a pitch and sell and have that smell of desperation. Just try to get to know people and make a friendship and make a contact, and then let them suggest, hey, you know, I do know a guy over here that's got a, that may be looking for something like that. Even if it's not something they do. I see a lot of people will talk to a producer if it's not, oh, you don't produce what I write, they just walk off. It's like, you don't know who that person knows and who their spouse is or friend or cousin. I mean, you know, you got to develop those, the network, and make those contacts and actually care about the other human being a little bit along the way.
Yeah, sound advice for sure. So let's dig into Tinker, which you guys were both writers on, and Tom, you were also the producer. Maybe to start out, you can give us a quick pitch or log line. Just what is that film all about?
Tinker is about a farmer who just really doesn't care about anyone else. He's a reclusive person on the spectrum, you know, sticks to his farm that was handed down to him by his father. And he just tinkers. He goes into his workshop and he works on small engines. But what happens is he discovers a journal that's hidden in his house that he hasn't seen, you know, ever. And it's his father's journal from the Vietnam era, where he was drafted by the military and brought to a undisclosed location to work on some of the top scientist projects like Einstein, Nikola Tesla. But what happens is we pick up kind of mid-story. So Tinker's actually a second book of three stories, because that's how it was written. And it was the cheapest book to shoot. So what happened is he finds this journal, and inside this journal is the plans for potentially wireless electricity machine. And simultaneously he becomes he's alerted that he's custodian of a 6-year-old nephew after his sister passes. So these storms collide together, and he has to decide between his obsession of tinkering or being a guardian and a father to this 6-year-old boy. And it really plays out beautifully, because Clayne Crawford and Colton Crawford are father and son. And their energy was beautiful. But yeah, you know, but it's a family film. It's something that is no cursing, no swearing, no sex, no drugs. And I'm sorry, we just lost half your audience.
Half, you lost them all.
And we see this poster behind you with the gun and the shooting and the cursing.
But you know what? You know, we discovered that there's a market. There's somebody, because it's really made for adults. It's not a, you know, kid film. It's an adult film, but it's got elements that kids like 8 years old, 10 years old, they're just coming back and they're telling their mom, going, oh my gosh, favorite movie ever.
Okay, that's great. So where did this idea come from? How did you guys get hooked up to this story? It sounds like it maybe was written as three books. And I notice on IMDb, there's a number of other writing credits. Someone got a story by credit. Someone got a co-writing credit. So maybe you can just talk us through what everybody did, how you guys found the story, and then how you guys developed it into a screenplay.
Back in 2012, the director and myself, Sonny Marler, he's our director, we started Co-Creo Productions, and we weren't quite sure if we were going to be able to work together well. And so we took a year of working on documentaries, music videos, reality TV with some friends out of, you know, the LA area. And we found out, you know, I learned his editing style, I learned his shooting style, and then I realized that, you know, we could actually put a feature film together. We really started on $40,000. And what happened is he had these ideas. They're all up here, every last one of them. And then he put them on paper. Then they were all torn out sheets. And so that's why he got the story by. And he actually was good friends with Clayne Crawford and Christian Kane, who are our main SAG actors. And they said, we will be in your debut once you find a producer that can do the job. And he finally says, look, I got somebody. I think you're going to like him, and he's going to get it done. And that's how we basically started forming a story around Clayne Crawford and Sonny Marler's idea involving a child, because Clayne Crawford wanted his son to be in the film. And we literally formed the script that was going to be, when we look back, it, the arcs were like that. You know, and so we really shot 15 days for start, but realized we had a lot of holes. We had a lot of elements that we really wanted to bring to fruition. And that's when we went to Kickstarter.
Okay. So you literally shot for a bunch of days and then did kind of a rollback, sent everyone home, and then 6 months later went and shot some more.
Yeah. Matter of fact, it was a solid 12 months later. It was the following year. We were worried about the child having no teeth. You know, because he was 6 at the time. We came back when he was 7, which was beautiful because he was actually he was very smart. Colton Crawford was 6 years old, you know, reading at an 8th grade level. And so he was even more mature and smarter when we came back. But yeah, we did basically 2 weeks of pickups 12 months later.
Okay. And so then who is the co-writer? Who was the guy that got the co-writing?
Okay. Well, Jade, she got the co-writer because she was a crucial asset. She was also my second AD on set. And while we were literally shooting on the first production, we were just trying to go ahead and put these elements together because we literally went from a screenplay in November to production in December. And the screenplay was, it wasn't what the results are. And that's why I brought Steven in because, you know, I knew he was a writer. He had books published and I was like, man, look, it'll be embarrassing if we win an award and I'm the writer.
and I think there were a lot of elements that kind of had to be tied together, you know, the footage that was shot, but there was like, okay, how do we put this all together to a movie? So that was kind of a challenge working with what we had, which I guess would be another tip to your listeners, like, hey, you know, you just have to, manufactured run. Sometimes you got to come up with a way to get a credit, and that could be working with something that's already in development, or they've got elements, they're things that are already ready to go do.
Especially shorts these days.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you get a SAG actor on a short, you have an IMDb credit. Right. Very good chance of a Sundance, South by, or Toronto, you know, some type of festival, you know, appearance. But the experience is more valuable than the title.
Right. And I think as you're, you know, like I said, this was a collaborative effort, but I think it turned out well. And, you know, there's definitely some great acting in it and some good moments. And, you know, we're happy with the result. But, I mean, it really takes a producer, though, that's going to get in there and just bulldoze it till they get to the finish line. Because there were many times when I know Tom had to
pissed off a lot of people.
I had to break out the checkbook or had to keep it going
or pay for it.
Hey, let's get going, or, you know, encourage everything to get to the finish line. Because, you know, as you know, you get, okay, you're finished shooting, then you got to go through post, and then up, you need color correction, up, you need sound. Oh, the distributor has this checklist of things they need. So it's a long process to get through. And a lot of people, you know, it's fun talking and going to the premieres, but I mean, that long haul to get from production, you know, when you stop shooting
to sell
is it's tough.
yeah, for sure. So I'm curious, Tom, earlier you mentioned that this was the middle story of a 3-story, I guess, trilogy. And how did you come up with that? Because when you first said that, I thought maybe it was based on books, so you were pulling a book, but it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like you guys cooked up this story, and then maybe there's other aspects that you're thinking maybe shooting before and after. Maybe talk about that a little bit. I get a lot of people asking about this sort of stuff, and I'm always hesitant. I'm always hesitant for writers to pitch in their query letter, hey man, I got a trilogy here, just because it sounds a little overly ambitious. It's like, let's just get one on the books before we start talking about trilogies. But how did that sort of work its way into it? And is that a little bit audacious to come out with your first feature and say, yeah, this is the first of a trilogy?
Well, no, actually, and this is going to be really something I learned a lot, and this is going to benefit your writers. When you first start, and everyone who's a writer knows that when you first start, you kind of are going to start with an idea, and then that idea is going to grow to something. Well, usually that's actually developed in your character, and you want to know what makes your character. So sometimes you have to establish, you know, what type of background they come from, where did they come from, what type of elements took place in their father's life that put them on this path. It's not a family curse. It's just what cards they were dealt. So what happened is we said, okay, well, I mean, this is going to be a story. It's kind of a mystery, especially because we're working with this second part of the story. But who was Grady Sr.? And then who was his mom? You know, what caused Grady Jr. to be such a reclusive person you know, besides the fact that he's a high functioning autistic individual. And then we said, okay, so we wrote a whole bunch about from the 60s, late 60s, where the Vietnam era was, to the point to where we actually got to the point, you know, where the little boy is actually a teenager. And we were like, man, this is a great story, but we can't shoot. We can't shoot this. I mean, and even some of the stuff that we shot, I would say probably 25% of our film got to the cutting floor. Because we shot so much with so many backstories and so many layers.
And there was a subplot that we had to really trim down to keep it to that kind of sweet spot, the 90, 95 minutes.
Stephen had some friends, Kat.
Yeah.
And with Nashville, she knew some people at Nashville Film Festival, and we sent the film. They loved it. But they were like, oh, we only want to know about the little boy and the uncle. All these sub stories, these plots, it's distracting us. So we had to trim it. And it's our fans, mainly the Caniacs, were disappointed because Christian Kane had some beautiful scenes in it. But we tried, I mean, and we still trimmed it just to get down to 96 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
We only need deluxe DVD edition.
Yeah, right. Yeah. but yeah. I mean, when we developed the story, there was so much backstory, locations we embellished on. And by the time we said, okay, what can we afford to shoot? And it was literally the moment where the uncle gets custody of his nephew. And that's where we picked up.
I gotcha. Okay, so let's talk about your writing process a little bit. It sounds to me, and again, if I'm wrong, just correct me. But it sounds to me like, Tom, you guys cooked up a script and then you went out and shot and then you brought Steven in after that first bit of shooting. So maybe let's talk about that process, because I know this is actually something that I think is more common than people realize, where a script is maybe going into production but in trouble and the producer brings in a writer. So I'd be curious just to talk through that, Steven, what did you get? Like when you started the project, what did you actually have? And then how did you and Tom work together? Was it collaborative in the same room? Was Tom just basically saying, here's my original draft, go make it work? Maybe talk through that process a little bit.
It was actually even stranger than that. It was a lot of it was footage where I would just watch the footage and say, okay, here's that footage in screenplay format, or I'm like, you know, typing it and transcribing it and creating a screenplay from at that point. And then we would have gaps in the story where, you know, Tom had it was a difficult process, because Sonny, like you said, he's got a lot of ideas up here. Getting it expressed and on the page was difficult, so that took navigating. And, you know, Tom was very clear in what he wanted, so we would have meetings, and I would go write stuff. And
what, minimal dialogue?
It was minimal dialogue. Minimal dialogue. That's the other thing. We'd have scenes where it's, you know, like 5 minutes.
Who picks a character that don't talk?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Unless you're doing a Sonic film.
So it was a strange process, but it was kind of a refreshing break, you know, because I was living over in the spec land and writing this where I'm controlling everything to, oh, wow, here, at least there's something that's going to get there, and I've got something to go by that's already, you know, on
the page.
Well,
it was good. It was convenient for him, because we literally went in, and although I had a script as a producer and, a guide for me for my shot lists, Sonny was, you know, he was just out there and depending on me to get locations, me to go ahead and set up these scenes. But it wasn't like we were passing out sides and, you know, something that was going to be, you know, definites. Right. You see what I'm saying? We had these elements that we wanted to capture, but we knew that Sonny mainly focused on the quietness of the characters. The reactions, the wincing of the mouth, the grunting, and he really got into, you know, capturing those elements, which developed these characters even more so once we started Got with Steven.
And it was a great departure for Klain, because he just showed his range as an actor to be able to do a quiet role, and, you know, because usually he's the most gregarious, you know, good old boy, you know, buddy type character.
Yeah, so a tough guy, you know.
I think it showed a lot of range for him, and it was it was fun to develop. I mean, it was an unusual process, we'll say. Yeah, yeah. But
I wonder if there's one specific problem, Steven, that the script had that you fixed. And maybe you can just talk through that. Like, what did you actually get? And then how did you actually fix that problem?
I think we had an issue. There was just so much of the backstory and so much of that history that they had richly developed. And, I mean, that's backstory. You know, I mean, occasionally you'll read a script or even see a film where you're like, wait a second, the first 10 minutes I just saw of this movie was backstory that we didn't need to see. You know, like You know, I saw a major film, Hollywood film like that a while back, where it's about a boy that I believe he's born on Mars and he comes back here. And they had this whole, it's like the first 10, 15 minutes of the movie was a backstory. You don't need that. So trying to trim back what we really didn't need that was essential. And then also to dramatize things, you know, because the tendency is to, okay, we've got all this information, let's do voiceover. And we would have these battles. If we didn't have any battles, it was about voiceover and cutting that back and cutting that back.
What Stephen helped us do is isolate our characters.
Right.
You know, I mean, literally we had, you know, multiple characters that we felt all were stars, and they were. But we had to isolate the characters, which simplified the storyline, you know, and he helped us simplify, because we did. We had a lot of, I mean, you know how people want to do, oh, we'll cover that in a backflash, or we'll cover that in this. And unfortunately, you know, that just gets monotonous if you just can't run the story. So that's why, luckily for us, the full film is cut twos. It's no fade, no cross blends. You know, it's hard cuts on everything.
And it is a movie that demands your attention. I mean, you've got to sit down there and you do focus on it and kind of get into the flow of the pace.
So much
of
deeper
it.
And, than what the surface is.
And I think it's really played well at festivals where people are there to watch the whole movie and you got kind of focused movie folks. And it's been interesting. Some of the reactions we've had have been somewhat divisive, but it's, you know, I think it's because we're talking about fathers and sons and some of these issues about family that really kind of seem to be, you know, cutting close to the bone for some.
Well, they're so used to seeing something more political, something that's, you know, something that's more familiar. And what we are is we're really an old story. You know, I mean, I watched, when I first started working on Tinker, I watched Sling Blade like 7 times, you know, during the writing process to see how that relationship, a brand spanking new relationship from two strangers, can actually grow into something. And that was my inspiration in the process of getting the foundation, you know, but that's an old story, you know. Now it's not that quite in demand, but we're finding that people are reading under the actual surface story and they're seeing the sacred geometry and they're seeing the resonation. They're seeing, you know, we got Reiki masters that are going like, oh my gosh, you're the first one to actually make a movie that addresses the stuff we believe. Hey.
And we had a Tesla machine that was in the office. We got some sound store. There was a company that actually is building these little...
Yeah, resonation machine that basically it purges the ions in the atmosphere, you know? And it's... So, yeah, we did a ton of research. It wasn't just something like, hey, let's go do this. This sounds cool and unusual. We did a ton of research.
Yeah. So, Tom, I want to just talk through that moment where you guys have gone and shot for a bunch of days and you're in that moment where you have to make that decision to cancel production, go back and retool. And I know, like, that must have been a difficult moment. And I think there could be a lot of value hearing sort of your process, because I know as a screenwriter, we've often written a draft and draft after draft, and then we get done and we just realize that it's just not working and we just have to go back and almost do a page one rewrite. And those are very very painful moments when we've been working on something for a long time and we just have to, it's a lot of being self-aware and being honest with yourself and saying, you know what, this really is not working. So maybe you can just talk through that process. What were the emotions you were having? And ultimately, how did you push through? Because I know there must have been something in the back of your mind that you knew once you canceled that first production, there was a good chance it was never going to get back there. That's the fear. You know, you got painful. This train rolling.
Yeah, that's a painful realization too. And I realized it on set whenever we were doing a moment that was your reveal, and it wasn't good enough. I mean, it just did not have that wow factor. All of a sudden I'm going like, we had all intentions of doing a full feature and I'm looking at what we have, which was absolutely gorgeous, and going like, wow, we have a mediocre short. So we put an edit together and we started looking at this edit and we presented it to Klain and we presented it to Christian Kane and our executive producers and says, look, we've got to raise more money. We need to finish this film, but it's got to be bigger. It's got to be better, like a Geico commercial, you know. And I said, we have to do this, but we don't have any money. So I pitched to them that I could do a Kickstarter campaign. And at that point, we took it to social media And we were super, I mean, look, if you're going to try to do a project of any value and you want to kind of build your own awareness and you're not on social media, you're totally missing a boat. You're missing the support. That's the big thing. A support of someone who loves your story or loves your actors or loves the location you're shooting at. You know, that support really carried me through this process. And it was very disappointing looking at what we did, but then realizing that this would never be a full, we weren't even complete. We were about 50%.
Okay. So let's talk about Kickstarter a little bit. I've done a Kickstarter myself for my movie Pinch. So I'd be curious to kind of get your thoughts. Maybe you can talk through that. How much money did you raise and how did you go about doing it? Did you read up beforehand? Tips, tricks, anything you can add? Because I know there's going to be a lot of people that would love to run their own successful Kickstarter campaigns.
I do a lot of research on anything. It's just my nature. But at that time, I realized that Kickstarter was going to be the only means because Seed and Spark just came out. You had GoFundMe. You had a couple of those platforms. But those platforms were saying, we'll give you a percentage of your money even if you don't get it. And I was like, okay. So now I've got 30,000 of 100 that I need. Now what do I do with that? You know, so I basically dove all the way in with a 30-day campaign. And what that campaign did, I mean, I've got envelopes right now here because I was promising DVDs to people like 2 months after we're done.
Right, right.
You know, God, look, naivety sometimes will let you accomplish amazing things. but I literally was, you know, and perks, you know, we were offering t-shirts. I mean, and realistically, posters. We're probably getting, you know, now that I think about it, maybe 75 cents on a dollar once you ship and pay for product and, right. You know, so maybe not even that much. So we still were short on funds, but we didn't just go to Kickstarter and put a video out there. We hosted a gala. We found people that were willing to sponsor the gala. And we had an artist, Jared Emerson, who's a famous artist out of Greenville, and he basically did a live finger painting of Tesla, and he let us auction that off. We had somebody that was so supportive of the film, they paid $3,000 for it. We had a lot of fans of Christian Kane that was able to show up on set and be in the film. They've been huge supporters throughout that process, not just for that money, but it was also supporters of the film, which really was a prideful moment when we were able to share the movie to them. And they were like, oh, wow, all these years, at least I'm not disappointed.
It helped later doing the film festival circuit. Like, these are the folks you would say, hey, we're going to come bring the film to your area with the film festival, come out. So we had a film festival here in the Baton Rouge area. We did like 4 full screenings of it. Then it helped with going to the distributor because you say, hey, look, here's our social media. We've got X thousand number of followers. We've got these people have already, you know,
we
contributed
won a,
and bought. And
we won an audience award at Indie Film Gathering in Ohio. it was a 20th event, or 20th anniversary of that festival. And we won an audience award because a lot of our actors' fans took the 4 or 5 hour drive to see the film. And they literally went in with gangbusters. And I'm sitting here texting one of the fans and they're going like, okay, they're about to announce. Oh my God, took the one audience award. I'm going like, out of all festivals I didn't go to. But you know, I mean, but the Kickstarter, use Kickstarter as a way to build your base. You can go ahead and get some money from it, which is great, but you also get a 1099 from it too. Okay. So use Kickstarter to make sure that you request enough, but don't go overdo it. We did a strong push from the very beginning just to get the number up. And then at the very end, we did a strong push, hosting a gala, getting somebody to sponsor a venue. We had 150 people at this venue. We did silent auctions. So if somebody wanted to buy a piece of artwork, a still artwork, they basically they bought that artwork, but they basically did it through a contribution on Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. It was a ton of
work. You see what I'm saying?
I mean, again, back to the producer willing to push it. I mean, Tom put in
a ton of work. So yeah, it wasn't just a whole bunch of people giving us money.
Right.
They were literally, we were saying, okay, we're going to do this, but you're going to do this in kind, basically through Kickstarter. And you win this jade necklace.
So, and that may also come back and influence your casting, because if you're looking at an actor, like, let's say, hey, this guy, this one's good. Oh, wait, this one has X thousand followers.
Cool story.
That makes a difference.
Cool story. So next go around, we're raising funds for the next movie. Chalet is not part of this film yet. Our little young actress, you know, who won her fight against cancer. She was 10 years old at the time, and she saw it on Kickstarter, and she wanted to be a part of the film. Hmm. So her reps reached out to us and says, Chalet Brannon wants to be on Tinker. And I was like, I don't have a role for her. We don't, you know, we're working on the screenplay right now to finish the film. And it was beautiful because it actually allowed us to give Kai, the Colton Crawford, his soundboard, his buddy. Hmm. So we wrote her in based off of her contacting us from Kickstarter.
Huh.
Right.
And she has, a cool story, right?
Yeah, that's a real cool story. Yeah.
But yeah, she has a huge following and she's done a lot of stuff. But I mean, she was a breath of fresh air. So we literally added a whole different type of storyline by introducing her, that really helped the full development of Kai, which was the nephew, the young boy.
And there are some actors out there that are looking to create that opportunity that may have a financial background or resources. Now you don't want, you know, obviously you still need your leads to be able to sell your film. But hey, there's that, you know, that third role, that fourth role, you're bringing something to the table, you know, you can get the job. A friend of mine wrote a script that has a notable wrestling actor who brought $50,000 to the table to get his first role. So, I mean, you know, you got to think creative. Kubrick's first film, I believe, was funded by a mobster who wanted to get his girlfriend in the lead. So, you know, whatever it takes to get your film made.
I would have not taken that money.
Yeah.
Right. Avoid career criminals. Actors are okay. Career criminals, not so much.
Yeah, not so much. You'd be in the Chili Palmer.
Cut. You talking territory. To me? You yeah. talk cut? No.
Yeah. And I don't think people, what you just said, Stephen, is a very good point. And I don't think people realize outside of the business how much of this goes on. Right. My guess is those sub-million-dollar movies, I bet like half of them are funded by the actors, to be honest. Because I hear that so often. When you really drill into like how these movies got funded, so often that's
what. And a lot of it's cobbling pieces together, because you can get, you know, gap financing, you can fund tax credits. So it's trying to come up with that initial money, or you're 100,000 short. So, you know, all kind of things happen to make those films go.
Yeah, all kinds of things, exactly.
Exactly.
So what advice would you have for people that are looking to break into the biz? Just some general advice. What do you think? And maybe you can come from the producer, Tom, angle, as someone who is a screenwriter looking to find a producer. How could they find a hustler like yourself? And then maybe, Stephen, you can give us some sort of advice for the beginning screenwriter.
Well, first off, sometimes you have to do it yourself. Okay, that would be the biggest advice, and that's how Tinker became what it has. You have to do it yourself, because if I was waiting on producers, because I wasn't a producer. I mean, and I still say I'm not a producer, but you know, but I am. You have to just go out and do it yourself and have a vision. Also, if you do and you are going to show me a script, it needs to be more than, you know, 100 pages of ideas that are down, because I want to visualize this. And I really don't want to take the time to visualize your vision, if you will, if you're not a established. If you're not established. So the biggest thing, I guess, would say is that you'd have to really accompany what your vision is. And the problem I see is that so many people write so boldly on their first screenplay. And you're like, okay, well, who do you see playing this? Oh, you know, I see, you know, this A-tier actor and this A-tier actor and this A-tier actor, and we're going to do it for 500 grand. And I'm like, okay, no, you know, now you got to go ahead and get, you know, gear it back a little bit, because the producer's looking at the dollar. He's looking at the locations, the dollar, how he's going to lock all this down. So I think it's probably going to be beneficial if you're going to put a story together, try to put a story together that makes sense to a producer. Not only I've got this grand story, but look, I got this grand story that's contained. that's something that's, you know, more character driven and has some good dialogue, but yet it's not going to cost you a fortune. You'll get more attention from producers that way, okay, than you will with this, you know, with Avatar 3. You know, that he's not going to be able to raise money for, or he doesn't have the resources for, or if he does, he's going to pick another project. So that's the biggest thing. Be mindful about what you're writing. It's not all about, you know, throwing it in the 70s if the 70s has nothing to do with your story, mm-hmm. because it's going to cost me money.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Steven, how about you?
Yeah, I would say make sure your script is ready to be shown. You've got an excellent group of readers that you provide. I've used them several times before. I think a lot of people, you know, you look back and you just kind of cringe. You're like, I really had that opportunity, and I handed them a script that was not up to speed. Because, I mean, you think it's great. Your buddies think it's great. You know, your roommate, whoever. You really need to get a professional reader to take a look at it and tell you if this is Hollywood quality or what you need to do to gear it up. So that's step one. You've got resources available for that. If people are in LA, they may have, you know, other resources they could use. But I'd really recommend to get not a friend. A lot of these writer groups, I think people are just kind of blowing smoke with each other. They're not really giving real feedback because they don't want to be critical. You got to get that objective voice to see if you're ready to show it. Then the other thing is, as Tom suggested, you know, write something that you could get made at a budget level for a new writer. So, you know, I've got a book called Trap that's about contained thrillers. So I've got one of those I'm trying to put together right now that could be made anywhere from $500,000 to $2 million, depending on the cast of it. But you've got a limited cast, you know, limited number of sets, limited budget. And, you know, that's something like, of course, you know, the film Buried, the ultimate limited cast, limited set, got made, and that launched his career, Chris. So, I mean, you've got to make sure your script is ready to be shown, and also write something that you could get made as a newcomer. Because if you write these big budget things, and I see people trying to shop the, you know, like you said, the trilogy or the, you know, the Lord of the Rings type thing right out of the gate, it's just difficult. You know, they're going to replace you. They may, even if they love the idea, maybe you'll get a story by and then they'll replace you, or you're just not going to be able to even get it to the producers who might be able to have the money. Whereas if you wrote something that was budget friendly, you might be able to get
you have a better chance. Oh, yeah. And I'll be remiss if I do not mention this. Make sure your story is marketable, because I mean, a producer, you know, if they want to do it for the art, you know, that's one thing, but that's the director. He wants to do it for the art most of the time. But a producer needs to get the money back. And if he's going to help raise money, he needs to give, you know, the liabilities their money back. And if you come to a producer with a story that's been done multiple times, or there's just not a market, like that's why genre films, you know, zombies, horrors, I mean, horrors in general, you know, but like if you come in with a comedy or something, sometimes it's tough, you know, to find a market. So you got to be able to, you know, well, what makes your script so unique and potentially make me money?
Yeah. So sound advice for sure. Right. How can people see Tinker? Do you know what the release schedule is going to be like?
Well, we actually did our LA premiere, and that was in November. Okay. We were in consideration for the Oscars, but we didn't have the budget to build the fame.
Nice. Hey, we're one of, what, 364
films.
Okay.
Oh, and you know what the cool part about it is? When we found out that we were in consideration, you know, as one of the small films, I got my list, and I saw all these beautiful films that I've seen throughout the year on this list, and then there was Tinker right above Tomb Raider, and because it's alphabetical.
A bigger budget.
So I'm like, oh, this is so cool. But the Academy of Motion Pictures and Arts Library reached out to me, and they wanted and requested a copy of the screenplay to put in their core collection. Huh. But I didn't just say, oh yeah, here's a PDF. I went ahead and called the librarian, mm-hmm. and I said, okay, look, I am new to this. That's one thing good about being a first time anything is you just pay stupid.
Right.
And I was like, look, I'm new to this. I have no idea what the core collection is. And he explained to me that the core collection doesn't get every script, like every nominated script, because the stories have been done over and over. And just because it's nominated, it doesn't necessarily mean it's something they want to add to their collection. But they found that Tinker was a very unique film, just in its entirety, and they wanted it to add it to the core collection. And I was like, well, what does that mean? He goes, well, pretty much your name is an infamy. Take it.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, so yeah. So where do you find this Tinker, jewel right here? Okay, this is Tinker, and we've won 19 best ofs throughout the festival run, 25 nominations. Our distributor for domestic is Gravitas Ventures. Mm-hmm. And currently you can see it on Amazon, Vudu, any cable outlet, video on demand, DirecTV, AT&T, Vimeo, iTunes. You can buy it on Amazon.com, Amazon Prime. So I know that Netflix is going to be coming as well, you know. So, I mean, luckily for us, the audience, the people that have watched it, have been vocal enough to give their reviews. So we're 4 out of 5 stars on Amazon, and we're 4 out of 5 on Vudu, and we're like a 4.3 out of 5 on iTunes. So, I mean, I think the film is speaking for itself. But right now it's for transactionals, which is, you know, the process. You have transactional, which is the very first phase of distribution, and then you'll get to subscription-based. You know, so we're only almost three months into our release.
Okay.
Well, so it's, yeah, watch it. And if you do watch it and you love it, please give it a review. If you watch it and don't like it,
don't give it a review.
I get it.
Yeah, we don't need to get tanked.
Well, this is what we find. He was saying that the audience is polarized. We have people that are 5-star, and then we have about 10% that are 1. And it's interesting because I really think that production value alone is worth 3.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we're okay. I mean, to me, it's like if you make a film and there's no strong reaction to it and people are just like, yeah, whatever, and they, you know, they forget about it 3 minutes after they walked out of the theater, that's negative to me. That's the films I don't like. Yeah. If I have a strong reaction, even if it's whatever on the you know, if it's positive or even negative, sometimes the negative ones I'm like, God, why did that film bother me so much? So. But I mean, I'm okay with it.
It's the marketing, too, because, I mean, I market this as a family drama. Yes, there's some fantasy elements, and we hit number 1 on Amazon Fantasy. Hmm. We hit number 43 on Amazon Family and number 62 on Amazon Drama when we released. You know, we didn't hit the number 1 spots, but, you know, for a small film that's, you know, low budget, ultra low budget, basically, through SAG's terms, we did a lot with what we had, which was very little. And it was the collaboration that was able to help us do this with, you know, great talent, good visuals. But realistically, they were marketing this as a sci-fi. And I do too, but it's not a sci-fi if you are a sci-fi channel fan.
Right.
I don't have big spiders, 3-headed mm-hmm. sharks, you know, I don't have anacondas eating giraffes.
Right.
So no, this is not a sci-fi for you. But if you're into family and real struggles and being a fly on a family's wall while they go through heartache, you might see some inspiration in this.
So, well, perfect. So what's the best way for people to keep up with what you're doing? Anything you're comfortable mentioning, Twitter, Facebook, a blog, website?
Oh, yeah. What we've done right now is that I got a lot of producer films, and it's funny because when the film is released, they stop. They don't promote. They don't try to sell anything. They don't even talk about it. They move on to the next project. We have a huge fan base on Facebook because we share behind the scenes photos. We're about to start dropping a bunch of cut footage, the bloopers. We're staying active because we do have a trilogy. We do have another 2 stories to tell. And the first one we want to sell is a prequel. So at Facebook, Tinker Movie, you can find us on Twitter, Tinker Movie. And on their Instagram, Tinker Movie. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, no fairies. We don't have any fairies in the movie, but nobody had this daggum name except for a short, which kind of blew my mind. And so we were able to kind of, you know, we connect through Twitter. Matter of fact, our Twitter audience is just, it's awesome. We don't have a whole bunch of followers. We have a lot. I mean, I've got my social media coach is like, y'all have so much retention. Your content is what people are looking for. They're looking at the behind the scenes photos. They're hearing the stories of the characters that are in the film and their development and their backstories. That's what we're showing. Mm-hmm. We're not just saying buy the film. by the film. She says I need to do it more often, so I might take her up on it. Right. But right now, we're just sharing our journey. Mm-hmm. Because it's an amazing journey.
And I've also got a blog, Wagstaff, the blog spot. You search Stephen Hoover, you can find that. And then also my Amazon page has all the books available on various film topics, mostly film topics.
So, Stephen, what do you have coming up? Because I know that's what he asked, right?
So, so what's next for you guys?
So what's next for you, dude?
What's next for me? Well, I've got two projects under option. One's called Horror Comic. That's the one that I wrote that won a bunch of awards, you know, when I first got back into screenwriting. And a guy named Jesse Rosenblatt has that optioned, and he's trying to put together the pieces of the puzzle. And then I've got the contained thriller that I'm actually trying to raise the money to do here. And then I've got another project called Funk You that's a fish out of water comedy that a guy named Mark Miller at Television 101 is optioned, and he's trying to get the attachments together. So I guess I'm kind of like you, Ashley, in that, you know, hey, I'll option stuff with people, hope they can run with it. Mm-hmm. But I've got multiple projects in various stages of development always. And I also realize sometimes you just got to, you know, get your own money and make your own film happen.
Yeah, for sure. And I wonder if you can just briefly, Stephen, just talk through those three projects. How did you actually network with those producers? Was it through Inktip? Was it through this service, that service? Was it just networking at events?
Yeah, the Funk You, which is a fish out of water comedy, that was actually through an Inktip contact. Okay. I did get that actually through Inktip. Then with Horror Comic, I can't even remember where I met Jesse. I've known him for about 10 years now. He was actually an attorney for the Weinstein Company. Then he went to L.A. and he liked this script, and he said, "Hey, what have you been doing with that?" I said, "Well, look, the other option ran out." He said, "Well, look, I'm out here in L.A. Let me see if I can run with it." Mm-hmm. And he's had a producing partner out there, so. I'll give people an option if they give, you know, if I feel like they have a decent chance of making something happen.
I mean,
it's like, hey, you're going to go try to make it happen, you know, go for it. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you know, like I said, I've got a buddy who's got 3 produce credits, and he's like, oh, I never give 3 options. I'm like, you know, if the guy can make something happen, you know, I don't want to make $500 to be in the way of making it happen. And then Tom and I may work on a project together again. We started it. Yeah, we started it. We're still under wraps.
It's a series. It's a comedy and it's something that I'm familiar with. And he actually was starting to put our series Bible together and we've got these characters. But, you know, all of a sudden we have a shift. Right. You know, on how we want the story to go, we're working on that.
It's got to be, you know, reworked, and it's always a process, and you never know what thing is going to get hot. You know, that's what these people who write one thing and they're working on one script for 10 years, I'm sure you run into them. You're like, man, I got, you know, multiple things out there. You never know what project is, you know, and hopefully it's like popcorn. One thing after another starts popping. But right now, we're still heating up the skillet.
I tell you what happened to me is that after Tinker got the buzz that it did, I was actually being approached, you know, with people that want to do projects. And I always told myself, why would you do a short film? You know, but then again, I find myself having a short film that we're shooting in March, another one in April. And I've got another one potentially in May or June. And I've luckily been able to have part of the writing on that, you know, because I'm also looking at these shot lists and trying to envision the way that I'm seeing this film come out. I've been approached by to do a documentary, a pretty large documentary. And then, of course, we just submitted to the International Christian Film Festival a screenplay called The Well, based off of a book by a friend of mine who lives in upstate North Carolina, or South Carolina, Michelle Barfield. And I read that book back in 2014. And I just was like, oh my goodness, this is, you know, I don't want to bore you with the full story, but it was just meant to be. So we just got finished doing our multiple last revision and we're happy with it. There's still some elements that we want to, you know, clean up, but it's a feature length. I still got to sell houses to pay for this addiction. Okay. This habit, you know, but hey,
I'm still chasing legal cases to pay the bills. It's like you gotta do what you can do, you know, with the time that you've got.
I mean, yeah, but if you like family film, if you like something that you can give the family, just follow me.
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm definitely focusing on that. The Well is an awesome story, and I can't wait to. We just actually launched our Facebook, but I'm looking forward to bringing that one out. Yeah. It takes place in Africa, or basically takes place in a green screen.
I got you. A green screen in Louisiana.
Yeah, I had something interesting. I got invited to join the WGA because the Funky producer is a signatory, even though they haven't made the film yet. So I'm kind of debating that. I'm like, well, I mean, it's a sign of professionalism, but, you know.
One day I'll be union.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, we could have a whole conversation on that. Maybe we'll circle back on that. Email me when you make your decision, because I'd be curious to hear kind of your thought process on that. So anyway, Stephen and Tom, I really appreciate you taking an hour out to talk with me. Great interview. Congratulations. I know how hard it is to get a micro-budget film done. So it really is a long journey, and I wish you guys luck. And, of course, when you guys are done your next film, let me know, and we'll have you back on to talk about that.
Okay, we'll do.
Ashley, thanks so much, man. Great meeting you.
All right, guys, take it easy. Bye.
I just want to talk quickly about SYS Select. It's a service for screenwriters to help them sell their screenplays and get writing assignments. The first part of the service is the SYS Select screenplay database. Screenwriters upload their screenplays along with a logline, synopsis, and other pertinent information like budget and genre, and then producers search for and hopefully find screenplays that they want to produce. Dozens of producers are in the system looking for screenplays right now. I launched this service at the beginning of this year, and we've already started to see some success stories. You can check out SYS podcast episode 222 with Steve Deering. He was the first official success story to come out of the SYS Select database. You can learn more about all of this by going to sellingyourscreenplayselect.com. When you join SYS Select, you get access to the screenplay database that I just mentioned, along with all the other services that we're providing to SYS Select members. Those services include the monthly newsletter that goes out to our list of 400 producers who are actively seeking writers and screenplays. Each SYS Select member can pitch one screenplay in this monthly newsletter. We also have partnered with one of the premier paid screenwriting leads sites, so I can syndicate their leads to SYS Select members. There are lots of great paid leads coming in each week from our partner. Recently, we've been getting 5 to 10 high-quality paid leads per week. These leads run the gamut. There's producers looking for a specific type of spec script, to producers looking to hire a screenwriter to write up one of their ideas or properties. They're looking for shorts, they're looking for features, TV and web series pilots, all types of different projects. If you sign up for SYS Select, you'll get these leads emailed directly to you several times per week. Also, you can get access to the SYS Select forum, where we will help you with your logline and query letter and answer any screenwriting related questions that you might have. Also in the forum are all the recorded screenwriting classes that I've done over the years, so you'll have access to all of those as well. The classes cover every part of the writing process, from concept to outlining to the first act, second act, third act, as well as other topics like writing short films and pitching your projects in person. Once again, if this sounds like something you would like to learn more about, please go to sellingyourscreenplayselect.com. Again, that's sellingyourscreenplayselect.com. On the next episode of the podcast, I'm going to be interviewing writer-director Mike Kravinsky, who just did a feature drama called Nothing to Do. Another inspiring interview from a guy who's just out there making things happen for himself. So keep an eye out for that episode next week. That's the show. Thank you for listening.